Hello and welcome to your 2019-2020 Mercury retrograde reading. My name is Eric Francis, your guide to astrology for the next little while. Here with a description, first of all, of Mercury retrograde in general as a thing, partly designed to demystify the whole thing, since it is one of those really mysterious things that is often talked about in astrology and shrouded in superstition. And I prefer to take a pragmatic and non-superstitious approach to the work. In other words, Stevie Wonder defined superstition as believing in things that you don't understand. So I'm here to bring a little bit of understanding to Mercury retrograde, which is one of the most common phenomena in astrology, and certainly since the birth of the internet, the single most talked about thing, except for maybe the new moon and the full moon, which we knew about anyway because they were always written about in the newspaper next to Jumble and Family Circus. They would stick in, or the almanac section, whatever. And that's as astronomical as it is astrological. Really, the only people who care about Mercury retrograde are astrologers. And then I guess if you're an astrophysicist sending a probe to Mercury, you'll definitely want to know exactly where Mercury is and what it's doing. So Mercury retrograde was one of the first things I ever heard about when I heard about astrology. And where I heard about it from was from the first astrologer that I ever met, who was somebody named Flo Higgins. I have an anthropology professor who is somewhat of an astrologer, but we never really talked about it. But the first astrologer I met who, you know, did astrology in front of me and in front of everyone was the first editor that I worked for at a professional newspaper in New Jersey in the late 1980s. Her name was Flo Higgins, and she was all about terrorizing everyone with the fact that Mercury was going retrograde. Our newspaper was one of a group of seven newspapers, and the newspapers had a central office up in Sterling, New Jersey, where we would meet like on Wednesday nights, whatever it was, to do the final edits and the layout and print the newspaper, which is all printed. All that stuff happened out of the Sterling office. And there was a guy named Jim who ran all of the technology in that office. And he, you know, that means he was the guy who would come in at midnight and take apart the printing press if it had to be fixed. And he was the guy who could run the computer system. And he basically ran the mechanical end of the company. And so persuasive was Flo Higgins, and so far was her reach, that everyone in the whole company knew about Mercury retrograde. But Jim, in particular, had taped to his door a little page that he copied out of Secrets from a Stargazer's Notebook by Debbie Kempton Smith. And it said right on Jim's door, "Don't sign, don't buy. Mercury is retrograde." So this even before the internet, people knew about it. Of course, if you know an astrologer, you're more likely to. And the "don't sign, don't buy" is the thing that is most often talked about. And I have spent now, since I heard about Mercury retrograde in 1987, it's now 2019, that's 32 years of hearing about Mercury retrograde, and I've been conscious of most of them during that time, because of course around when I was working for Flo, it was common newsroom discussion. You know, most newsrooms, when they want to get off topic, they talk about the Mets or something like that. We would talk about Mercury retrograde, and then have tracked them ever since. And so I've had a lot of time to contemplate, think about, and observe what this whole thing is. And I am not of the position that astrology causes things. Now, this is, it doesn't mean that it doesn't. It means that I prefer to not take that position. I prefer to read astrology as a thing that indicates what to contemplate, think about, be observant for, rather than thinking that there's something pushing us around. So it is absolutely true that Mercury retrograde is a factor in the environment when it happens. And it happens when Mercury passes between the Sun and the Earth, because Mercury goes around the Sun every, is it 88 or 89 days? And that means that about three times a year, Mercury passes between the Earth and the Sun, because Mercury is going faster than the Earth. And so we get this period of time where Mercury is what we call retrograde, which means that it appears to be moving backwards through the zodiac. That is to say, it will appear to be moving backwards in a chart, and its number will go down instead of up in the ephemeris for those 3 weeks that it's retrograde. And that's a real thing, the fact that Mercury is right near the Earth, the closest to the Earth, and Mercury is a big hunk of iron. It has a magnetic influence, it has a gravitational influence, and there's all kinds of quantum effects that we don't really know about or talk about. But one thing that we know from quantum physics is that basically everything has consciousness on one level or another, and things that seem to be acausal can be directly related, even at very great distances. So I don't discount the possibility that there is some causal influence with astrology, but I prefer to not go there since that has not been proven. But what is well established is that we can learn things by reading charts. However the effect is transmitted, I think it's better to not clutter one's mind with being too speculative or you know, laying too much on certain possibilities, but let's just say that it you can benefit greatly from being able to read a chart. Now, speaking of, I have just recorded a 15-minute video that explains how to find Mercury retrograde in the chart and in the ephemeris. And so this is a thing that requires a visual demonstration, and we will place the link right with this audio link so you can get some visual sense of what I mean when I say that Mercury is retrograde, Mercury's longitude is declining, or that Mercury is in one of the shadow phases. I visually demonstrate what that is and show you how that looks both in the ephemeris and how the retrograde looks in the chart. But let's talk briefly about how it is that this thing has any effect at all. So Mercury is said to mess with mechanical objects, such that it is perceived or believed that things go wrong more frequently when Mercury is retrograde. It is also said that Mercury influences financial matters, economic flow, and that the retrograde can have an impact on the flow of cash. Additionally, Mercury retrograde can be associated with, and I'm not saying that any of this is proven or demonstrated, but the kinds of things people say is they are more likely to do something like lose their keys or lock them in the car. You hear a lot about that kind of thing when Mercury is retrograde. But then there's this other thing of, for example, electronic transfers not quite working, or you collect the mail and the check you're expecting is stuck between two pages of the supermarket advertising circular, and you think that the check is missing, but it's really in there. So being a person who is open to rational explanations for what goes on in the world, and not so much seeking to debunk anything, but rather to understand things, I've spent a lot of time contemplating what it is that the lost keys and the computer system going wrong, and, you know, going sideways, and the check being slipped between the pages of the Penny Saver instead of being where you were expecting it to be, like stacked up on top of the Penny Saver, for example, what they all have in common. And the one thing they have in common is that we perceive them. The one thing they have in common is that they are all figments of our minds, as anything is a figment of our mind when we're perceiving it on Earth. Things don't really exist too far apart from our perception of them. And even to the extent that they do, we are filtering everything through our perception. And so, though I think that it is possible that more goes wrong when Mercury is retrograde, and there are certainly those retrogrades when it seems like everything just piles up, or every weak system has the weakness revealed. Like, that's one of the phenomena of Mercury retrograde. The thing to bear in mind that I think that we know for sure is that Mercury is the planet of the mind, and it's the planet of communications, and that means that it's a facet of human consciousness, and that all experience is filtered and or perceived through the mind and through the senses. And so that's the common ground of everything. And my sense of Mercury retrograde is that that's really where most of the action is. Most of the action is in how you are perceiving reality and how you are responding to certain events in reality, to the events that happen. And so if for example, you have some kind of a computer issue and you're not quite thinking clearly, it is certainly possible to compound that issue compound at any time. But if Mercury's primary influence and main effect is on the mind, then it is certainly high likelihood that your mind is going to be the thing that is the most influenced, and then you're going to experience not just the effect of Mercury retrograde, but the effect of your brain and your consciousness on Mercury retrograde. And I think this is it's basically a guaranteed position, because we do know that everything that we're experiencing comes through the mind, and we know from, you know, the first sentence of any astrology book that Mercury is a planet that has to do with thought and communication. So I think of the whole thing as being about our perception. And so one of the first things to do with Mercury retrograde is, if it's not broke, don't fix it. And if it's broke, maybe it's not broke, and don't fix it and see what happens. And resist the temptation to rip things apart and try to solve them. Now, as for the issue of whether to purchase or not, and whether to sign or not, I have found that for the most part, things go better when I complete transactions away from Mercury retrograde, as far away as possible. And as a professional consultant, I will work with people to ensure that they are able to do that as much as is reasonably possible. And the reality is that we do need to take breaks from spending money. And so I think that the 3 weeks, three times a year of Mercury being retrograde, and then the 2 to 3 week margin on either end of the retrograde, the shadow phase, are a good time to do things like repair things from the past rather than go forward, and not spend money, or not spend so much money, but rather attempt to make do with what you have, or perhaps you still have it. We tend to have a lot of stuff here in the West, and we don't really need to buy all these new things. And so I think of Mercury retrograde as kind of like a Sabbath from starting new things and from buying too many new things, and think that it's a really good idea to use the time to be efficient and to work on efficiency and to complete things from the past. So this is one application of astrology, kind of as a guide to when to do things. And I think this is an appropriate use of it, kind of like an almanac, you know, recommends times for planting and times for harvesting and tells you, you know, when there's going to be a new moon, probably a better time for planting, full moon, better time for harvesting. And this is one way to use Mercury retrograde. That said, we are existing within the frame of astrology, and we can read these charts. You know, we can look at what the particular qualities of a Mercury event are, any event really, and see what we've got going on. And so, what I've done for the purposes of this reading is I've cast the charts, and also ephemerides, so you can see those for the next three Mercury retrogrades. The one that begins July 7th, and then another one that begins October 31st, and then another one that begins on February 16, 2020. By which time we're going to be in a whole new reality. We're going to be full on into the world of 2020, and there are some interesting patterns. One of the things that I look at is what element the retrograde tends to take place in. They tend to follow elements through the year, and most of the Mercury retrogrades we're going to be experiencing now are centered, well, all of them actually, of the three that I've mentioned in early 2020, are centered around the water signs. So, for example, the retrograde beginning July 7th at about 7:14 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time begins in Leo, but it winds up in Cancer. It begins at 4 degrees 28 minutes of Leo, and that's right at the beginning of Leo, and so since it's retrograding, it's going to go into Cancer pretty much as one of the next things that it does. And then on the 31st, it stations direct in the sign Cancer, right around the Leo full moon. So one thing we've got going on is a lot of Leo and Cancer happening at the same time. Inner planets do tend to follow the Sun, especially Mercury and Venus, though Mars is going to be close to the Sun during this time too. And so there's through the summer, as is typical, but maybe perhaps a little bit more so now, there's going to be a lot of interplanet activity in Leo and Cancer, and those, of course, are the signs associated with summer in the northern hemisphere here. So the retrograde that begins on July 7th is noteworthy because there is a triple conjunction of Mercury to Mars that is involved. So you can see if you look at the chart that Mercury stations retrograde at 4 Leo 28, and that is less than 1 degree away from Leo, Mars and Leo. Mars is at 3 and 49 Leo. And Mercury has a way of, coloring. Mercury has a way of taking on the colors and feelings of the planets around it. In one article for Star IQ, I called it cosmic tofu, because tofu doesn't really have any flavor of its, unless you have really, really fresh, cold tofu, and it's as good as eating sushi. But for the most part, we rely on all the flavoring of the food around things like the peanuts or the sauce or the spices to give the tofu its flavor. And Mercury does a lot of picking up the flavors of the events around it. So one thing we've got is that when Mercury and Mars, Mercury and Mars are dancing around each other around the time of the Mercury station. And so there's going to be a triple conjunction of Mercury and Mars associated with the Mercury retrograde centered around the summer of 2019. And the first thing that happens is that there's a Mercury-Mars conjunction on June 18th. Mercury's direct. And then Mercury stations retrograde a couple of weeks later, actually on July 7th, and on July 8th, the very next day, there's the second conjunction of Mercury and Mars, only this time it's in Leo. So there's going to be two Mercury-Mars conjunctions in close proximity, one with Mercury direct on the 18th, and then one with Mercury retrograde on July the 8th. So, and then there's a third one, which I'll get to in a second. So I have an old friend, one of my buddies out on the West Coast named Debbie, and she was always fond of saying that the whole world needs an anger management course. I would propose that this is kind of an anger management Mercury-Mars retrograde pattern. There's often a lot of anger tied up in Mars, and you know, we're under some really big Mars transits right now as I'm recording this, with Mars passing through the Grand Cross and then Mars about to make an opposition to Saturn and Pluto. And so we have a lot of that influence going on right now, but there's a lot of Mars in the world. You know, we're a society that is on one level driven by desire, and then on another level completely fraught with desire. Like, it doesn't know how to handle desire and is constantly making wanting in any form taboo, and there's a whole mess around you know, guilt around desire. And I think this is one of the things that drives the market as much as it does, because typically here in the West, we tend to feel better about things that we've paid for, and you know, this seems to have a quality of going back to the Reformation era complaint of Martin Luther, which is that the Catholics were selling indulgences. They would, and it is a fucked up metaphysic to declare things wrong, and then say it's okay if you make a donation to the church. That this is a sin. This conduct is a sin. You know, having sex with that person, or eating a pig, or whatever it might be. You know, but it's okay as long as you make a donation to the church. And I think that we have some of that kind of Catholic-styled Puritanism running our capitalist society, in that people feel better about the things that they have paid for, and tend to think of as potentially sinful things that they haven't paid for. So that's going on, but the mental stress of Mercury Mars in a conjunction is, I think, would be a good topic for contemplation. And Mars is also a caution against doing things too hastily. It's a caution against accidents. It is a caution against misunderstandings. And so the Mercury-Mars conjunctions can include possibilities like a series of overly hasty communications that result in some kind of a misunderstanding that needs to be sorted out. And so I think with this summer series of conjunctions of Mercury and Mars, particularly associated with the retrograde, right? Because the retrograde is somewhat infamous for misunderstandings, that the idea is to slow down. Cancer and Leo tend to be emotional signs, and Venus, by the way, is right in the sign Cancer at the time of Mercury stationing retrograde. So let's see, there's going to be more interplanet activity. Let's see if we can take a look at the third Mars-Mercury conjunction. Okay, so that takes place way out in September. So it takes a little time to resolve, and so there's this rather extraordinary alignment on September 3rd, 2019, which includes a Mercury-Mars-Sun conjunction, exactly. very impressive conjunction of Mercury, Mars, and the Sun. And Venus is right there. So what that is saying is that Mercury, Mars, Venus, and the Sun are going to be tracking each other all summer. I'm going to turn on the animation facet in this program and see what that looks like. So we're I'm looking at I'm kind of playing the summer backward, and basically what it's looking like to me is that Mercury, Mars, Sun, and Venus all stay within a few degrees of each other for quite a long time, for about let's see how far back this goes. Ready in July. This is the program to get if you're going to get one astrology program. It's called IO Sprite. You can sort of cast natal charts with it. It's not really designed for that. What it is, though, is a program that's very good at watching transits go by and watching the planetary patterns move, which is, you know, how I can see this and see this developing story. Also noteworthy, right ahead of this Mercury retrograde, there is an eclipse of the Sun. Let's get a date on that. The best eclipse tool on the internet is at Serenu, SERENNU.com. A fantastic multi-featured website by Tracy Delaney, and the Eclipse Finder requires registration, and you can get registration for $1 a month. So it's well worth, and I don't think she accepts more than $10 a month. So it is well worth subscribing to this thing just for the mere sake of giving your dollar or $10 a month to make sure that it that the programmer is happy and that this thing exists for everyone. Okay, so what we have is a total solar eclipse on July 10th. Total solar eclipse on July 10th. Pardon. Total solar eclipse on July 2nd at 10 degrees of Cancer. It's an easy one to confuse, the degree of the zodiac and the day of the month. So July 2nd, 2019, at 10 Cancer 37, there's a pretty good total solar eclipse happening. This is leading right into the Mercury retrograde, followed by a partial lunar eclipse on July 16, 2019, in Capricorn. That is, by the way, going to be very closely conjunct the Saturn-Pluto conjunction that is a developing story, and it will be square Eris. And so the summer Mercury retrograde is going to be accentuated by eclipses. And the thing that eclipses do is that they tend to concentrate experience and accelerate experience and make things seem more karmic or predestined. Whether they're actually more karmic or predestined is another story, but that is how eclipses can feel. So combined with Mercury retrograde, this will be an interesting month of July, and that is an invitation to make sure that you are you getting important work out of the way. Make sure that you're doing your best to stay ahead. It is always good to stay ahead of your cash with Mercury retrograde and to start to slow down and accumulate cash rather than spend it with near or during the retrograde. And speaking of buying things, the thing that I have found is the most common about making a purchase during Mercury retrograde is that either I didn't need the thing or it doesn't work the way that I thought it would work. So that is one of the reasons why I've learned to either wait, or if I make the investment, make sure it's a relatively small investment, and I don't care if that happens, or I can just return it, return the thing. But when I make a purchase during Mercury retrograde, I make sure that I know that I'm taking a risk in that sense of things. And, you know, I'm someone who's done things like, you know, once when I came back to the United States from Belgium in the summer of 2007, I purchased my first new car, a little Nissan. And and I made sure that, you know, even though I signed on it with Mercury, still the very end of shadow phase, I picked it up after Mercury was out of shadow phase. One comment before we go on regarding Mercury storm. I can't believe I've done a 15-minute video and 31 minutes of audio and haven't mentioned Mercury storm. Mercury storm is the few days on either side of the station retrograde or station direct. And they are always very interesting days. Now, there is some exact measurement of when the Mercury storm is. I really think of it as basically being 3 or 4 days ahead of the retrograde and 3 or 4 station, either direct or retrograde, and 3 or 4 days on either side of the station direct. And these generally are the most intense times in Mercury retrograde. And if you need to do something, it's definitely best to avoid that. You're unlikely to be thinking very clearly. And if you need to do something important during, like, purchase or sign for something, try to plan it for the day of the Mercury-Sun conjunction right at the middle of the retrograde. There's a little kind of eye of the storm phenomenon right in the middle of the retrograde, where the Sun and the Mercury line up in what's called the interior or inferior conjunction. And that is a little bit of a way out. And I do tend to avoid doing anything I don't have to do during Mercury storm phases. Again, 3 or 4 days on either side of the station in either direction. One other thought about Mercury stations before we get into the Mercury retrograde of the autumn, Northern Hemisphere autumn of 2019, which is one of the things I found Mercury stations good for, is squeezing the truth out of situations. If there's some situation that I don't really understand that well, or that I find is in some way perplexing, the nearest Mercury station will often shake the truth out. This has worked journalistically. It's worked during personal inquiries. There's some kind of a shift of consciousness that shifts perception when Mercury changes apparent directions that can be very helpful. Another thing I found is that it helps to settle in a little bit to the retrograde, as if there's a new psychological weather pattern going on, and you need just to get used to the new level of moisture, the new pressure, the new temperature, and all those things, and whatever their equivalent is with Mercury retrograde, and like get used to the new conditions. Of course, during the summer Mercury retrograde, they're going to be changing very fast, so there's not really going to be much getting used to it. There's just going to be moving along as things happen and as they develop. Okay, so by the way, the shadows and the dates of the stations direct and retrograde are posted as a little index associated with this reading going out to the early 2021. All right, so the Mercury retrograde that begins on Halloween of 2019 at 11:41 a.m. daylight time. We're probably still in daylight time. at that time, or maybe just came out of it. In any event, right around noon Eastern time on the 31st, the shadow phase actually begins on the 11th of October. And then the station retrograde occurs on the 31st. That'll make an especially spooky Thanksgiving. Now, just as the previous Mercury retrograde was involved with Mars, the autumn, that is to say mostly November, retrograde has Venus as one of its starring figures. And so Mercury goes retrograde in a triple conjunction with Pallas Athene, Mercury, and Venus. And this is an interesting mix, considering that it's all going on in Scorpio, and that Scorpio has this sexual element to it, and Pallas Athene and Venus also has this sexual element to it, and Pallas Athene has a kind of a cool asexual element to it. So this triple conjunction reminds me of something I talk about almost every week on Planet Waves FM, which is about how our society doesn't have real conversations about sex. We have conversations about sexual identity. We have conversations about transgression. We have very bad conversations about agreements and boundaries, and we have nearly no conversations about feelings. And so the combination of Venus, Mercury, and Pallas Athene in Scorpio is a kind of an invitation to have a real conversation about real things that concern us, that might be troubling us, or that we might need to seek some understanding with. It is become fashionable to not be allowed to perceive female people as being sexual. So the prohibition has moved from transgression being unacceptable in whatever form someone thinks that takes, to the mere concept of a female-bodied person being sexual. And this is patently ridiculous, as any female-bodied person will tell you, that perhaps they're not especially sexual, but they're not especially not sexual. Everyone's going to be somewhere on the spectrum. But the real thing I see, especially with Mercury involved and with Pallas Athene involved, is that there has to be a framework for the conversation. And the thing to embrace with Pallas Athene is that it grants a kind of a cool opportunity to speak about things in a somewhat detached way. So as with Vesta, there's a little bit of detachment with Pallas Athene. There's the ability to, not be so overly emotive and not to be so triggered. The thing to avoid with Pallas Athene is the legalistic side of the conversation, such that this notion that things either have to be discussed in the concept of society's laws, or they have to follow the pattern of in some way being legalistic. And the reality is that our emotions, our sexual desire, our passions, our fears, our needs, generally speaking, don't follow any kind of a legalistic pattern. The other discussion with so many things going on in Scorpio is that there's not much honest discussion of death either. And so we try to live this life, which is framed, we think, between birth and death, without really, except under the most extreme or adverse circumstances, discussed death, and then ever so rarely discussing what birth actually means as well. And so when we've got an alignment in Scorpio with Mercury involved and with Venus involved, we are in a really good position to have an honest conversation about these matters of beginnings and endings and what you might call the real material of existence. And so that's how I see this framed. And additionally, the thing with Mercury retrograde is that is an introspective thing. That's not so much about you, but it's about me. And so with Mercury retrograde in this context, you want to be making more I statements than you statements, if you make any you statements at all. And be thinking about things from an inner reality rather than an outer reality. On a similar line of reasoning, one thing to be mindful of with Mercury retrograde is that there can be a past orientation, and this is something to use consciously. If there is a past orientation, make sure that orientation is being used to heal rather than to perseverate. Over the past. Obsessing over the past, not a healthy thing, but awareness of what you need to contemplate, discuss, resolve, or explore in the past, retrieve from the past, that could be a very productive conversation to have. All right. Then Mercury goes direct on November 30th. Sorry, 20th. I want to just check the calendar and see what day of the week that is. November 20th. So it goes direct November 20th. That's the day. It's a week before Thanksgiving. Good. I'd rather keep these things away from civil holidays if possible. So Thanksgiving Day is on the last Thursday of November. That's the 28th, and Mercury goes direct a week and a day ahead of that. With this Mercury direct, Mars is still tracking Mercury. So Mars is now in Scorpio. And has just entered Scorpio at the time. The conjunctions are all done. Those were back in September. And the sun is at the very end of Scorpio. And there's a whole bunch of stuff either in Capricorn or about to be in Capricorn. By the time we get to the end of 2019, the thing we are really looking at is the conjunction of Saturn and Pluto. The conjunction of Saturn and Pluto has been brewing for a long time. I trace its effects initially back to late 2017 when Saturn entered Capricorn. And this is a conjunction that last happened, I believe, in 1982. Let's just get a quick look at Sprite on that. So, events stop when Saturn is conjunct Pluto. All right, so these Saturn-Pluto conjunctions don't happen very often. Saturn takes 29 years to go around the zodiac. By the time it's gone around once, Pluto has advanced a few signs, and so it's going to happen about every 37-ish years. So, for example, there was one in the summer of 47. Then there was one in November of 82. And then there's one in January of 2020. So that's all, like 37 years and change, almost 38 years between the last Saturn-Pluto conjunction and the current Saturn-Pluto conjunction. So they have a long warm-up, and I think that the warm-up counts for any time that Saturn is in the same sign as Pluto about to make the conjunction. This chart has come out of a glorious chart. Jupiter has entered Capricorn by this time, and then the conjunction of Saturn and Pluto is actually a four-planet conjunction. It's the Sun, Pluto, Saturn, and Mercury. End series. I'll just put that in. So there's a dwarf planet in picture, a great big asteroid right in there. And so I've been looking at this chart a long time, and I don't understand it yet, and there are just those charts that I don't understand until they happen. But that's a heck of a lot of Capricorn to have, particularly at the time of this conjunction. And these conjunctions of Saturn and Pluto tend to change the world. And so too do the oppositions of Saturn and Pluto. And the last time there was an opposition, which happened midway between 82 and 2020, was around 9/11. So there was an opposition just weeks before the 9/11 incident. And so when Mercury goes direct in November of 19, what we're really looking at is the Saturn-Pluto conjunction, which takes place just a few weeks later. One last of these interesting events to cover, and this is the Mercury retrograde that begins February 16, 2020, and ends March 9, 2020. And, you know, by this time, we are now in the post-Saturn-Pluto conjunction phase. So that is a distinct phase, and it kind of commences 2020 with a bang. It's going to be a crazy year. All kinds of weird stuff going to be happening in politics, which we can see by this impressive alignment of planets at the beginning of 2020, which begins with the Saturn-Pluto conjunction. And then on the day that Mercury goes retrograde in Pisces, this third retrograde is all in Pisces, except it's going to go into Aquarius for 2 degrees. The alignment in Capricorn is Mars, Pholus, Quaoar, South Node, Pallas Athene, Jupiter, Saturn, and Pluto. That's a lot in Capricorn. So we are looking at a very political chart for a very political year. There is another Mars Chiron square in February 2020. We're currently under a Mars Chiron square right now. That happened yesterday from when I'm recording on the 23rd of May. There was a major political development on that day, which was that Julian Assange was charged with 17 counts under the Espionage Act. That is indicative of a lot of things. It's an attack on the free press. He was charged for things that were done with legitimate journalistic intent and were reported widely by many media, and we would not have known about, for example, the civilian casualties database out of the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. We would not have known about the Baghdad helicopter incident had Assange not translated that, decrypted that video and put it in our hands. Once again, we will have a Mars Chiron square just after that Mercury retrograde begins on February 16th, 2020. And this again brings up the context of the discussion of sexuality. I mean, this is the way I've been saying it over and over again, and will keep saying it. Mars again is the planet of overtly expressed desire, and what some call maleness. And you may have noticed that this whole maleness thing is constantly being curtailed and attempted to be trimmed back and made wrong or made weird or made something that it's not. And I am concerned that maleness itself is being delegitimized, that this thing called cisgendered maleness is the attack of considerable, the focus of considerable attack, and that men really need to be thinking about what it means to be male in a more conscious way. Because if men don't think about what it means to be male, other people are going to attempt to define what it means to be male for them. And so if you're a man, you want to be making your decision about what it means for you to be male and not letting other people make that decision for you. Nothing quite dials that in like a Mars Chiron square. This is the question of what to do with your desire. And the retrograde Mercury is asking another question, because the really outstanding thing about this Mercury retrograde, the one that begins again Feb 16, is it begins in a conjunction with Nessus. Nessus is the centaur planet. It's in the same group as Chiron, so it's not an asteroid. It's not really an outer planet, but it acts like an outer planet, or it can act like a very powerful asteroid. And in the current situation, Nessus is quite distant from the sun and is acting as an outer planet. And Nessus is the thing that we think we're talking about when we're talking about this whole issue of consequences of sexual transgression and all of the residual injuries that people are dragging around. And the notion of consequences is rather powerful with Nessus. And I am fond of Melanie Reinhardt's concept for Nessus, which is that the buck stops here. There is an old article that I have that we'll put on the resources page for this reading, called Mercury Weaving the Story of Nessus, where there was recently a Mercury retrograde a few years ago, where there was a lot of Nessus in the Mercury retrograde, and we get questions like the issue of codependency, like classical codependency. There's two main uses of the word codependency. One is a more vernacular use, and the other is a more clinical use. I'm speaking more in the classic clinical sense, with the drama triangle involved and the victim rescuer perpetrator scenario involved. And the deepest meditation, I think, around Nessus is around the concept of being a victim. We do a lot of training people to be victims. It's almost as if one doesn't have some identity as a victim in American society right now, you're nobody. And so you have a lot of people wanting to be a victim, even though there's nothing that really qualifies when we look at the situation in the world with one hard thing happening after another. There's a viewpoint that says we got a lot of nerve thinking that we are in some way victims, particularly with what the United States has done so wantonly to other societies. In any event, the whole concept of victim consciousness comes up with this Mercury Nessus series of conjunctions, and there'll be one a bit ahead of the Mercury retrograde. Let's just dial that one in while we are on the topic, when Mercury is conjunct Nessus. So there is going to be, oh, that's exciting, on Valentine's Day of 2019, when lots of people are out having dinner, and exactly at 10:19 or 9:19 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, when all the Valentine's Day dates are happening, Mercury is going to be in a conjunction with Nessus. Then it will be another conjunction on okay, let's do this again. Valentine's Day 2019. That already happened. Okay, let's try. Oops. That was this year. Okay, the next one is February 10, 2020. February 22, 2020. And then March 29th, 2020. So the pattern of Mercury retrograde in the late winter and early spring is a Mercury Nessus pattern. So once again, we're in territory where we have to have or have the opportunity to have the conversation that we don't want to have. And the thing to be aware of is that there is this thing called projection. And the thing of projection is putting onto other people what is too difficult to see and or accept in yourself. And it's I would no longer call it a phenomenon of psychology. I would almost call it a mandatory requirement of our world right now, where it seems like in order to be cool or whatever, it's necessary to blame people and to not take responsibility and not speak in I statements. And so with Nessus, we want to do a lot of speaking in I statements. We want to be the place where the buck stops. And with Mercury so powerfully involved, the question really is, to what extent is our identity invested in being a victim or in being a survivor? And there are a lot of folks who are just stuck on this, where it's just a kind of obsession. And it is absolutely necessary, I think, for anybody who wants to be happy and productive and creative and adapted and be, or just merely social in a pleasant and positive way that's, you know, useful in some way, however you want to say this, to be in ownership of what is yours and to not be blaming the world for the things that you are struggling with. And this requires a few things, one of which is requires the ability to have a conversation, then the having of the conversation, and the ability to be introspective. And this ability to be introspective seems to be something that has really fallen on hard times. And I think that one thing that's interesting is that over the sequence of these three retrogrades, we are getting the message over and over again that we need to be both introspective about and then expressive about these things that are so intimate to us, and recognize that unless there is some introspection coupled with the conversation, that there's really nothing being talked about, and that one's need to heal, one's need to resolve the past to the extent that is possible, because it's all going on in one's mind, right? The past lives in our minds. And so when we talk about resolving the past, we're really talking about resolving our thoughts of the past, and our perceptions of the past is a necessary condition of healing, because healing always involves something from the past. And so how we speak of the past, how we frame the past, what we think the past means, what we think our relationship to the past is, and all this, this is all a phenomenon of consciousness and of thought and ideas and speech and the need for sincere understanding, first, of ourselves. So anyway, this retrograde wraps up on Mars 9, 2020. And March 9, 2020, and in very late Aquarius. And so that to me looks like a gradual emergence from a kind of a sense of being emotionally overwhelmed and triggered, and the ability to be a little bit more detached. And this, by the way, this Mercury direct happens just before something that is a pretty big deal, which is Saturn entering Aquarius for the first time in nearly three decades. So there's a Saturn sign change that takes place on March 21st. So just when Mercury exits the shadow phase, that's on the 29th, Saturn changes signs. And then all through 2020, Saturn is dipping back and forth. It re-enters Aquarius on July 1, 2020. It re-enters Capricorn, pardon me. And then it re-enters Aquarius on December 17th. 2020, it is followed immediately by Jupiter, which is on December 19th, 2020, and then on the winter solstice, Northern Hemisphere, winter solstice, just 2 days later, there is a conjunction of Jupiter and Saturn. So those last days of 2020 are going to be very, very exciting days. I have written about this copiously in Intelligence, the 2020 annual reading, which is done and available and well worth studying Aquarius in your chart. But before we get there, we're going to have this even bigger, well, equally powerful conjunction at the beginning of 2020 and one at the end of 2020. So the thing to remember about 2020 is that it is framed by two conjunctions, Saturn-Pluto at the beginning of the year and Jupiter-Saturn at the end of the year. All right, so this is the first ever reading of its kind. I've wanted to do one of these for many years and now seem like the time to do it, and I wish you well. And if you have any questions, drop us a note at cs@planetwaves.net. Someone will answer your question, or if they want to pass it on to me, they can, and you can request that. Thank you for being a Planet Waves customer and for trusting me as your astrologer. And I now leave you in the capable hands of Vision Quest, one of our few pieces with lyrics. And this is written and sung by Daniel Sternstein. Bye for now.